Welcome to Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkgaard. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are solely those of Valerie, her guests, and callers. Now here's your host, Valerie Kirkgaard.
This is for you. This is for you and me, and who we see when we see each other. This is for all. This is for all the time you tried to find your sister or your brother. And you're not crazy anymore. You've been waiting at the door. And it's time to open.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. That is so time to open. Good morning, you American State Nationals. You are listening to Waking Up in America, Dynamic Radio Dialogues, brought to you by Key Media, which is actually Key Intergalactic Media, happily200.hghbreakthrough.com. Once again, happily200.hghbreakthrough.com. When you go over there to the website, make sure you watch the two videos and that you sign up, because when you sign up, you're actually signing up to reverse your life back to an earlier, healthier, happier time, and it really does it. I'm actually been challenging life very powerfully at 77. In fact, the editor of my paper has told me I'm a heroic warrior, which is pretty cute. I like that. We like brag.com as well. Apple cider vinegar has got to be the best bang for your buck, and the energy that's behind BRAGG.com with Patricia Bragg is astounding. Happily200.com is our website for the possibility of living to be 200 years old. Right now we're putting together a research directory on that, which would certainly include the Nova Center and other ways of advancing consciousness at a more rapid pace, and we have those things available to us right now. TheCodingCompany.com, which cleans the eustachian tubes and actually keeps you, so you can actually hear better, like what's actually in the subtext. You could actually even hear subtext if you've got your tubes cleaned out, because there's actually hairs in there that are part of your antenna system that all the gook that's in there can't covers up.
Morning.
Your body can. Paul, we're right in the show in the introduction, so when you enter, if you would wait until the appropriate time, thank you. Bob Sebastian of the Home Shopping Network says we're doing radio that's changing the world, and Bob, we sure are doing that. And if you hear a phone ringing, a dog barking, an angel singing, an ET singing, or a dear friend from Washington dropping in, we call in from our homes and offices around the galaxy to create this program. Now, Jesus spoke in Aramaic, and this is really important, because in the Lord's Prayer, pray actually means to go out into the world and get that which is yours. And that's what we're doing here on Waking Up in America. We're giving you an opportunity to, for you to hear something and say, I like that. I'll do that. I want that too. And to make sure that you always include a prayer for the celebration of our republic, for the United States of America, the men, women, and children who represent and serve our great nation, our animal friends, as well as each other in our communities. So this is a very community-based program. This is also a very inter-country program. We've got actually anywhere between 1 and 5 listeners in the Ukraine. I always love how that happens, and that happens through Voice America, and that happens through WHLD in Buffalo. We've got friends around putting us out in different places, and this is our 31st year in radio, so we're really enjoying being here, and we're enjoying the people that we've met. Now, Randy, can they tweet you today if they want to ask a question?
Totally, yes. And Randy, it's actually twitter.com/RandyShannon. Randy spelled RandiShannon. We actually also have twitter.com/TheBodyCan. So TheBody, C-A-N. And we've got a lot of really, really great posts over there.
Yeah, that's terrific. And what Randy's actually saying is that you have one idea of what your body can do. I'm saying the same thing, too. Since I've been taking this drive, and since Randy's been working with what she's been working with at the Body Can, all the way from soda baths to all kinds of things, these things change they take you out of the medical model, and the medical model really isn't here to cure you at this time. It's really here to sell you drugs. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that because something very exciting is happening in my life right now. The sheriff of the Sheriff's Department of Los Angeles County has been ordered to evacuate me out of my house for foreclosure. I wanted to see how the process went, and I actually had somebody that was willing to buy my house a couple months ago, and I said, no, don't do that, because what we want to do is we want to expose how this system works. And how this system works is that they don't really want your house. What they really want to do is get you into a position where you've gotten a notice to vacate, and then they try to force you out of your house so they can file something called an abandonment on the house and claim that you abandoned the house. And then what happens then is that then the mortgage company, after they get this notice that you've abandoned the house, and you can go out kicking and screaming, they're still going to file that you abandoned it. They file that, and then they get paid some amount of the house, of the house. Now, what's fascinating about this is they've been raking in on your signature since you first signed it. So when you first signed your mortgage, and you signed a note, and you signed the paperwork for that, the note and the deed, for them to ever foreclose on the house, they had to keep those two things together. The reason I can tell you all mortgages are illegal or not real is because they didn't ever keep those notes together. What they did is they separated them. And when they separated the notes, they bundled them. You've heard the term derivatives? So then they sold the derivatives as originals, because in California, we're not just a sanctuary state for criminals, physical criminals. We're a sanctuary state for bank criminals, because in the state of California, and you may never have heard this before, I actually had to go through a whole trial to find this out, they give equal value to a Xerox signature as they do to an original signature. And that's how they give the banks in California a way of stealing our homes. But as they say, they're not really after their homes. What they're after is making us vacate them. So they're forcing us to vacate the home, and they're using, in our case, the L.A. County Sheriffs. Well, it happens that I have a few friends in the Sheriff's Department, and they don't like what's going on, but they're under order. So at this point, I have turned the sheriff away three times, and I've had visits from a really sweet, Vanya, bless your heart, a social services worker who came over to make sure that I was safe, because I am 77, registered, handicapped, and full of sass, which she found out yesterday. And she's actually interested in getting Thrive HGH when she saw who I was at 77. So I'm having conversations with people, and I'm having them with the sheriffs through the door, because you never let them in. You can't let them in. The moment you let them in, they're taking that as you want out. They're telling me constantly that I'm going to be evicted, and all I say is, we'll see. And today is my day to line up with the media and send them the documents that I've collected. So the exciting thing about this is this has all been happening in the dark, in the compost heap, in the secret, not to be seen, not to be heard, none of that stuff, because I get little clues all over the place when I pay attention. I even got clues from the Deutsche Bank attorney who didn't want to take my home and was trying to slip me little clues on how to get out of him taking my home. I got clerks in the different court buildings who go, you know, I can't believe what's going on here. The banks are doing things they're not supposed to, but, you know, I'm not supposed to help you out, but I'll do this. I have a clerk at one court that says, oh, you know, because in the pro se courts, they won't tell you how to do it. They won't give you the information. So you have to discover it by error, almost. So in one of the courts, I'm in there, and I'm filling out some paperwork, and the woman goes, oh, you didn't mean to do that one, and she, like, whited it out, right? So they're correcting me because I can't get proper representation, and they send you around to different places, and if you have no money, oh boy, then are you in trouble, because you're into another tricky layer of stuff, and they assume you're some kind of a nitwit or something and can't fight them. And then they pull sneaky stuff on you about, oh, well, you didn't sign the second part of the papers, okay? It turns out in federal court, if you want to go in pro se, which means you represent yourself, and you don't have the money to file the papers, you fill out a form, and the judge approves of it or doesn't approve of it. And in the state court, if you go in pro se, you fill out one form that allows you to go see the judge, but if you don't fill out the second form for the trial by jury, the Seventh Amendment trial by jury, they'll dismiss it. And they'll just throw it out, and then they'll give you a trial. My trial consisted of being asked, do you have a case in federal court? I said, no. Do you have a case in, are you in bankruptcy? I said, no. He goes, okay, go into the other room and sign the papers. That was my trial. At no time did I get any chance to even say anything about that. So right now, we're looking at the appropriate paperwork to file in the court systems and things of that nature. And as we go through this thing that we're doing here, that I'm doing, it's kind of like a snowball beginning to roll, okay? Go over to GoFundMe. Be the first one. I just put it up this morning. Go over to GoFundMe and go to, I think it's Save Our House. Oh, let me see what it is exactly, as I said. It says, Fighting to Save My Home or Our Home. It actually says, the link says, Fighting to Save My Home. The picture says, Fighting to Save Our Homes. And it isn't just to save our homes. It's to step out of the system. It's really to take down the banks who have been profiting off your labor. I have a friend that's worked two jobs to because he's paying off the thing on his mother's house, and he's cranky and sick all the time, and that house should have been paid off for him a long time ago. So join me in this. Go over to, as I say, GoFundMe, Fighting to Save My Home or Fighting to Save Our Homes. I think you can probably find it. You'll see a picture of my house. You can't see behind the tree that Buddha's there, but I'm not leaving. And if they have to carry me out, they will, because that's what you want to do. If you're going to leave your home, let them carry you out, because then you can argue that you didn't abandon your house. So that's the current that's the current update on this. And Randy, any questions or comments before we introduce our perfect guest here?
Just you were the Olympic torchbearer, Val, and you're carrying the torch again. You're just doing it in a different fashion. So there's a lot of people that totally understand what you're doing, and you know, I second your invitation for people to go and look at what you have going on. Look at the fight that you're putting in. You may not be doing everything right, but you may not be doing everything wrong. And
well, that's an interesting thing that you say that. What I do, and sometimes I go, why did I do that? But what I do every single solitary morning is I get up and I ask the Holy Spirit. And I'll just say that because that everybody's got a Holy Spirit if they're looking for it. I ask the Holy Spirit, what's the thing I need to do today? The thing I needed to do today was to have a really hot radio show with Jose and you and Paul, who's here. And the other thing I'm doing today is I'm putting together all the stuff for the different TV stations and stuff. A couple of them want to see the forged documents and things like that, and I've got all that. I actually sent Tom Hargraves is the person who's just done a brilliant job. If you happen to talk to him, he actually sounds like a robot right now because he's dealing with throat cancer. But the guy is full of sass, and he's just a brilliant researcher. And he can dig up the trash on your mortgage. So even if you've lost your home, these clinics that we're going to be starting, they're going to be California right now, and we can raise more money. Or if you want to join us and get them in your state, state laws vary a little bit, okay? Like, I don't know if other states have this same law that makes Xerox and wedding signatures equal, but I know that you would much rather have the original Mona Lisa than a Xerox copy. And that's what gives them access, Randy, to actually doing all the corruption, is that one law that we have here. So that law needs to be repealed in California, and if you've got it in your state, go after it. Paul, you came in, and do you have any? Do you have like about 5 minutes of hot news for us?
Well, you know, all of this saga that you're suffering and going through is absolutely fascinating, and I think overall it's very, very valuable for the general public. My question is, what is the difference between the legalities associated with California and the other states? Is abandonment a technique that's used in other states as well?
I don't know. I think it probably is, because I believe abandonment is actually how they get control, how they get control of the insurance funds. See, they've insured you. I mean, even when you didn't make your first payment, they had insurance on that. They've had you insured all the way. I've actually seen, Paul, people being traded on the New... I saw my name being traded on the New York Stock Exchange. They take your name and they make money off your name in a variety of ways. I don't even know all of the ways.
It's shocking. Absolutely shocking.
It's shocking, but you know what? It was funny you said, I think, suffering with or something like that. Do I sound like I'm suffering? I've had more fun than I've had in years. Absolutely more fun, because I feel like I'm in touch with the Holy Spirit and that I'm doing Spirit's work. And I ask Spirit every morning. In fact, I have a pendulum, and I say, are they coming this morning? And the pendulum will say yes sometimes and no sometimes. And so far, the pendulum has been 100% right. Okay? And you can call me a kook. You can call me anything I want. But that makes me laugh every morning. And then they come at a particular time, except the Lost Hills tend to come between 10 and 2. The Santa Monica office likes to show up at 7 o'clock in the morning. After I told them that I was recording them for CBS, they then called me up and gave me time to get dressed and said they'd be over with the sheriff and their boss and stuff. So whatever's going on for you, you don't have to just bite it. Join us, because I've got 20 legal beagles working on this easy, and everybody comes up with something. And every time I go somewhere, for instance, I go to a pro se court, Paul, and in the pro se court, in the pro se help place, the guy says, I can't really tell you the answer to what you want. He said, but how did they serve you? And I said, oh, they handed it to me in the driveway. And he goes, well, that's not a legitimate service. That's an improper service. I said, really? What were they supposed to do? He said they were supposed to put it on the front door. I said, does that invalidate the vacate? And he goes, uh-huh. They have to repost, and then they have to give you 5 days after that. So one person gives me one little piece of the puzzle. Somebody else gives me a little piece of the puzzle. A Tibetan Lama opens up the front door when the sheriff comes. I mean, I got spiritual help here. And I'm having fun, and I do panic periodically, probably about 20 minutes a day. And the rest of the time, I chuckle a lot.
Well, if you take your B vitamins, Val.
we should probably get Jose on the air. What do you think?
Sounds great.
Jose, you come actually through the graces of... Randy introduced me to Rob, and that's how you got here. And I love the conversation with Rob. I've got all kinds of stuff lined up for him and things like that. But you're the Bitcoin pro, and you're here, right here on Waking Up in America. And so on one hand, we've been talking about insidious corruption, right? And on the other hand, your expertise is transparency. So go for it, buddy, we'll ask your questions.
Well, thank you, Dr. Kirkert and Dr. Shannon, for hosting me and for allowing me to share a little bit of what's happening in the technology industry and what blockchain can bring to the table. You know, as you had mentioned, dealing with all these entities, legal entities, blockchains bring transparency to the table, and they allow us to do away with that third party, trusted third party, and that just opens up a world of opportunities in the technology field, in different business use cases that haven't even been developed. And I think that's what I'm all about. There's a lot of people surfacing in the scene, claiming to be Bitcoin experts. But most importantly, we need someone that understands the platform itself, which is the blockchain.
Let me just stop you for a minute, because sure, maybe all of our listeners haven't heard. What exactly is a Bitcoin?
So So a Bitcoin, it stems, this is actually 30 years of research. It's not something new. People think that it, you know, it came about in 2017, but researchers have been working on this project of cryptography and economics and coins for the past 30 years. But it wasn't until 2009 that Bitcoin was actually released to the world as a complete solution that could be used as an alternative currency, which is has become now a global currency, digital currency, and it has a global community behind it. And that's what makes it so powerful, the fact that there's a global community that is willing to accept it and trade it.
Well, the banks must hate it, mustn't they? Because can they even figure a way to get a percentage out of it?
That's a very interesting question. And that's the basis of the foundation of my doctoral research. I'm looking into ways on how to accelerate the adoption, the acceptance and adoption of this technology. So banks are going to hate it because millennials now, they have more faith in Bitcoin and blockchain than depositing their funds into banks. And that's a problem for them. You know, they will experience a high significant attrition rate. And they can always come my way and consult for my services, and I can probably help them a little bit in terms of understanding some ways to offset and maintain their customers, because they're going to see an attrition in customers and in value as well.
I bet. Why don't you give out your contact information right now
Sure.
that people can actually go visit your site as well.
Perfect. So primarily, my niche field of expertise is in cybersecurity and government cybersecurity and commercial industrial cybersecurity. Everybody can reach me at jneto@pc-warriors.com. That is my main cybersecurity company. But right now, as we had discussed, you know, I feel...
Do that a second time, Jose. Do it
sure.
a second time.
That is jneto@pc-warriors.com.
What a perfect combination of the cybersecurity and the Bitcoin.
Right, and I think there's a bigger need for that in for humanity right now, because governments and top 100 companies, they have the staff to have cyber, but the little companies and the individuals do not. And I think that's where I'm trying to help make this world a safer place in terms of cybersecurity.
Yeah, I get it. That's what I like so much about this. So
what a small world. I didn't know that you were into the cybersecurity at all. So definitely somebody up in Canada that I would like to introduce to you that I talk to on a regular basis. I think that we could have some great synergy and possibly even bring him on. Fascinating person, a former fighter pilot with the Canadian military as well as the U.S. military. So you guys, I think we could have a really great show with all of you guys on at the same time.
What's
be
the
really
name
fun.
Of your friend?
I don't want to say it yet until I talk to him.
But we know he's a fighter pilot. That's good. I like that. It kind of like gets me all jazzed up. This is good.
Well, former, I mean, too, but he's in security now, and he's doing cybersecurity, and he figures out all the hackers, and he, in fact, he'll be here in the United States again. He comes back and forth. He'll be here again in March. So we may just be able, he said he may want to come down to Miami, so we may be able to just broadcast live from Miami with
that. Oh, that could be cool.
Yeah.
No, I like it. I like it. See how it all happens? This is why we do dialogues, Jason. Jose, this is why we do dialogues. We do dialogues
right.
Because stuff comes up inside the dialogue. Now, for instance, our listeners may not know, if you have Apple phones, you can actually, do you know this, Jose, that you can actually go and get your phone encrypted through an Apple app?
There are different options, and that is one suggestion I would give to the public to encrypt their information,
uh-huh.
because at this point, that is the only way. You want to have encryption at rest to protect the confidentiality
of your
information.
Now, can we also encrypt private lines? Because I've got a landline, and then I've got a cell phone, and my cell phone is encrypted.
So you do have applications that give you encrypted voice over IP, and there are devices that will allow you to do that in the landline.
Great.
But they're more accessible in the commercial space.
We may be able to do some teaching on that, because what we want to do is we want to give you options. You're living in a different world than you think you're living in. If you're over 70 years old, you always remember about how interest rates were only 10% and anything over that was usury, and all your food was organic because that's the way it was grown in those days. The title of my book is Swimming with Alligators, Jose, and I'm writing it right now. And we're in the swamp. We're in the swamp with the alligators, and you need to protect yourself. And one of the ways you need to protect yourself is with the cybersecurity that he's talking about. And another way you need to protect yourself is through transparency. And it sounds to me that I don't understand how blockchain chains and bitcoins work, though. They occur for me like they're two different things. What are they?
Perfect. So the underlying platform is really the blockchain. And so to really simplify it, it's nothing more than a ledger. You know, let's say a community needs to keep track of their gross domestic product or their value. So they keep a ledger, just like banks. But in the past, we've relied on governments and we've relied on banks to keep track of this ledger. And obviously, we're trusting them. But now with the emergence of a blockchain, we no longer need that third party. It is basically a self-sustaining system that keeps track of the transactions. So by having this system, self-autonomous system that keeps track of the transactions, we can freely transact between one another and having that peace of mind that the transactions have high integrity. So it's very revolutionary.
Well, when did that sense of security come to it? Because I don't remember that. The first time I heard I had Bitcoin on air, I don't remember blockchains. Have they always been there, or are they a new addition for security?
Blockchains are really, they've always been there since day one, but people have just focused on Bitcoin because that is one of the use cases, which is a cryptocurrency. But people forgot to, they didn't see the real value, which is the blockchain. So the way I try to explain it to different people is Bitcoin is just one business use case, which is a cryptocurrency, but the blockchain is the operating system that will power hundreds, if not thousands, of new business use cases in the future. And we've already seen that in healthcare, in real estate. We've seen that creating different forms of other business use cases, advertising. I mean, there's an emergence of these new blockchain projects.
How do we see it in, say, healthcare?
Healthcare is because we need to safeguard patient records and try to protect HIPAA. And once again, the nature of blockchains is all about cryptography and being able to encrypt that information and maintaining the confidentiality, the integrity, and availability of those patient records. So it's a perfect business use case for the blockchain industry as well.
Have you heard about this thing where Buffett, and I think it may be Amazon, I'm not sure, they're actually pulling out of insurance companies and they're creating their own insurance for employees? Would this be part of this? Because it sounds like it could be.
So Warren Buffett, as highly respected as he is, even in my eyes, you know, as an investor, I think he's a little bit against cryptocurrencies currently. And I think it's because, you know, he's already well established as an investor in the traditional markets. But the blockchain market has provided that same opportunity to the average person to be able to invest and have that exponential gains. And
well,
I think we see
about
it.
That. What, I mean, we're talking about the technology of it. One of the things that I thought it was too difficult for me or something like that when I was listening to it, there was a 15-year-old kid on the show who had actually bought himself a house with Bitcoin.
I believe it. They're buying that all day long. And cars and Lamborghinis.
Okay. But he did something called mining. He was like mining for coins, and all of a sudden it just seemed too complicated to me.
And I was doing that as well in 2015, mining. That's actually, as an engineer, that's one of the reasons that I got started in the blockchain industry, because of the mining. And I can probably elaborate a little bit on that to share that with the rest of your listeners.
Well, please. We're waiting with bated breath.
Got it. So mining, you know, with, let's say, Federal Reserve is the entity that prints our fiat money and value here in this particular country. And in different countries, there's different entities. We're in the blockchain space. Everything is digital, so there's no entity behind it. And so the million-dollar question is, who prints the money or how is the money generated? And that is exactly what mining is all about. So you have cryptographic computational machines that they work with cryptography to solve a puzzle, and you get rewarded every 10 minutes. So kind of like simplifying that, it's nothing more than a machine that secures the network and allows you to process the transactions on behalf of the network. And people are doing that throughout the world, and they're getting rewards in Bitcoin.
I'm still feeling stupid on this. Something hasn't clicked for me yet that I understand how doing puzzles and mining for coins gives you wealth.
Got it. It is rather complex in the beginning, but let's just say that we know that cryptography is all about math. That's all we need to understand for this point. It's all about mathematical algorithms. So these machines are doing exactly that. They are helping process the transactions and maintaining integrity for the entire world. And the system gives you that reward to offset two things: the cost of computational power and the cost of electricity, because they do cost, they consume a lot of electricity. Just to give you an example, when I was mining in 2015, my light bill was around $3,000 a month.
Good Lord!
But at the same time, I was generating more value than that, where I was happily paying $3,000 in electrical bill.
So, okay, you just touched on an interesting conversation here. You've got a $3,000 electric bill. What did that actually generate for you? Do you keep it in your bank account, or do you have a crypto wallet, or what do you do?
Yes. So I have a crypto wallet where I keep everything. And I can't disclose the amount of Bitcoins that I was generating at the time, but I was running close to 100 terahashes, and for 2015, that is a substantial amount. Nowadays, I mean, there's companies out of Canada and companies in China, companies in the U.S. and everywhere that have warehouses of these units. And, I mean, by the hundreds and by the thousands, and they're generating millions of dollars on a monthly basis.
Well, it almost sounds like Rumpelstiltskin turning straw into gold.
Bitcoin could be seen as the digital gold. That is a good analogy.
Huh. Jose, can you explain why? Because to some people they say, you know, it's backed by nothing, formed out of nothing. Why is it not being called a scam? Why do some governments absolutely hate it? Some investor companies, I think it was Merrill Lynch or somebody, that came out and said you cannot buy it. Why do people hate it so bad?
So there's a split community. So the bankers,
yeah,
the government, and the traditional investors, they're going to hate it because now currently there's close to $500 billion of a market capitalization in the digital market. So all that money that has been shifted from the traditional markets onto the digital markets, and they're not part of that party, and they're missing out. So they're losing money. And those are the people that are against Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies and label it as a bubble, and they think that it's going to tank. But from an engineering perspective, it is highly sustainable, and it has a revolutionary concept that no one's done in the past, which is there's a finite amount of Bitcoins. There's only 21 million. There will ever be 21 million.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So in that case, yes, so they appreciate in value. Because they're calling it Bitcoin is almost like a collector's edition. There will only be 21 million, and this is the reason why you will see the price go up again and again throughout the years to come.
Okay, so it's not like U.S. Treasury notes being printed like toilet paper. There's 21 million of these things, and they're just going to keep getting more valuable.
That is correct. That is the key as to why this is not the bubble that everyone thinks it is.
All of a sudden I get it.
Sustained by mining. Yep.
But I'm still a little bit lost. If it's out of nothing, backed by nothing, how does it not just lose its value like Beanie Babies did when, you know, they went high, they went low, they became worthless? What makes it worth something? Just because there's only 21 million, but 21 million what? Pieces of ghost. You know what I'm saying?
Dr. Shannon at work.
Right. That is a phenomenal question.
Yeah.
And you know, I've spoken with people at politics, economists, lawyers, and they ask me these very tough questions. And the answer to that is everything starts with community. You know, we've been conditioned to think of value in terms of money. We no longer say, you know, this is my value. We say this is money, and I get paid in money. But we have to go back to our roots, understanding that what we're dealing with is value, and paper money is nothing more than a representation of that value. So when I give seminars, I give the example, if I had a briefcase of $1 million and I go to the moon, how much is my $1 million worth? And the question to the answer to that is zero, because there's nobody willing to accept my $1 million. So therefore, it loses its intrinsic value. So since this Bitcoin community started 8 to 9 years ago, and now we have a global community of people that are willing to accept it. I mean, you can buy cars with Bitcoin. They're selling. You can buy property in Miami with Bitcoin. You can buy goods. Different businesses are accepting it. So now you have a global community that has placed this intrinsic value in Bitcoin as an alternative global currency.
Well, it's certainly worth more than dollars, U.S. dollars.
What if the U.S. currency doesn't, you know, right now it's backed by nothing. It's just printed and printed.
No, that's not correct. They back it by gold. Randy, correction. You didn't hear, and I'm sorry I didn't pass it on to you. U.S. currency is now backed in gold for the first time since 1970.
But I didn't hear Donald Trump say that.
Hear him say that, but it's true. And I just wanted to let you know that. And that's part of the reason we're going to just give a little teeny thing here for the global currency reset and a little pitch for Trump. One of the reasons Trump was running around opening up oil lands and all of these different things was to give the U.S. dollar value again, because the currencies of the world are now being valued against the resources of the countries they represent, which is why you have the Zimbabwe currency. If you have big projects and you're willing to transform the world and work with a Zimbabwe partner, and you have a $100 trillion Zimbabwe note, and you're a humanitarian with a strong plan and partners, you can actually probably get $200 trillion for that note, and you'll sign an NDA for it, and you'll take on projects that will be part of transforming the world, and this will, I'm sure this will happen by June. I'm sure of it. I actually think it's happening right now. I have reports that it is. In Switzerland, some of the land has been grounded as far as cashing in is concerned. While you've been busy studying what the body can do, I've been busy reviewing tapes and doing my stuff with all the different currency issues that are going on. We've got Gesera and Nesera that are coming through this year, and you want to look those up. One of them is the national, Nesera, and then the international is Gesera. When they say the poles are changing here on Earth, they're not just changing electromagnetically, they're changing as far as currency is concerned. They're changing as far as personal wealth is concerned. If you don't want any of these NDAs and you have a $100 trillion Zimbabwe note, you'll probably be able to get just over $13 million for that. And you say, insane, crazy, how could that happen? This is part of a 400-year plan, 500-year plan that's coming to fruition right now. And that's part of why it was time for me to stand up and say no to the bank. And I have the background of having cleared sufficient fear so that when they knock at the door, I tell them that I'm worried about their soul, which was a fun conversation I had with one of the sheriffs. I said, I'm worried about your soul. He says, you don't have to worry about my soul. I get paid to do this. I said, exactly. So we're all having our dialogues, and Jose is here. I mean, this guy comes in really clean. When you listen to people, you don't hear any baggage with Jose. He's clean. He's into the cyber part of it, the safety part of it. Do you know anything about this global currency reset that I'm talking about, Jose?
I think there's a lot of changes that will come from different governments. And for an example, even Dubai right now is trying to be on blockchain, running on blockchain by 2020. And I see that becoming a trend by other states and governments.
Yeah.
So that is significant, you know, that the countries are looking into blockchain to power their ecosystems, their financial ecosystems. But there's just one concern that I have from a cyber perspective, is that currently we have a $500 billion industry and no one is protecting it. You know, with all these individuals having Bitcoin, they are becoming a digital bank, a personal digital bank, and they don't have the infrastructure to protect it. And neither do the small companies. And I think that's going to be the biggest gap. You know,
okay,
we're going to continuously see hacking attempts.
I'm going to introduce you to somebody, and I'm going to do it off air, okay?
Correct.
Just simply because I think the conversation is longer. Her name is Ellen Brown. And Ellen Brown is one of my legal beagles, okay? And she and her team are creating creating state banks right now. And I think
Very well run on blockchains.
Exactly, exactly. Do you see why I'm getting excited? Because I see
all
the pieces coming together. I see that instead of being suppressed by what's been going on, that I think it came actually with the blue moon, the super blue moon. It seemed to be that's when the change came, and when I felt like I was on the offensive rather than the defensive. It's like now I feel the creation occurring across the board in different ways, possibility for radio shows in China and all over the place happening right now, talking with you and Rob. Randy's putting together some big stuff for us. All kinds of things are happening. This whole thing where homeowners are actually going to get legal assistance so that they don't have to be tricked out of their homes. This is big. What we're doing, this is the time. We are part of draining the swamp and organizing the structure and building sturdy structures. I'm known for that, by the way. That's why I've been on air 30 years. You don't have a good structure, you ain't on air that long. Something happens and knocks you out.
Well, if we could swing back into the Bitcoin thing here, just again, so you see Bitcoin as still going up. I know it took a big plummet here recently, and you know what? It's constantly been up and down, and I know that there's very good reasons for different adjustments in the whole Bitcoin thing. But what about some of these other versions, like Litecoin or Lite, I guess it's called? What about some of these offshoots of the Bitcoin?
Sure. So currently we have over 1,500 cryptocurrencies. I know a lot of people probably can mention Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Litecoin, and Ripple, but there are 1,500 coins. Now, out of these 1,500 coins, I would venture to say that probably 5% of these coins are actually valuable. The other ones do not have intrinsic value. So as a trader, as an active trader, I do my analysis looking for these coins and projects that do have intrinsic value. And that's where I believe with cyber, you know, all these coins have to be protected. All these people, you hear seminars and you hear infomercials of people telling you how to make millions of dollars with cryptocurrencies, but no one is saying how to protect it. How good is it to generate $1 million and then lose it with an exploit? So
with a what?
I think that with an exploit, hacking,
that?
You know, When a hacker goes in, compromises your system, and exploits, you know, your cybersecurity posture. Correct.
Okay, got it. Yeah, I know. I had some concerns about that, too. So,
Ripple,
when you come on and you're the security expert, I think we've got it covered. Randy, you were starting to say something, and I...
Yeah, you said 5%. Can you name the 5%? Is it Ripple, Ethereum, Lite? Are those all part of the 5%?
Bitcoin, I call it, is the dollar in the cryptocurrency market. It has the first mover advantage. So obviously Bitcoin, so far remains the number one cryptocurrency. We have Ethereum, which is the platform that allows other digital tokens to be created and transacted with. Litecoin, has a very global community, and it's very similar to Bitcoin, and at this point does have some additional advantages such as the Lightning Network, and SegWit, segregated witness, not to get too technical, but these are features that have been added on in 2017.
Lightning?
Yes, Lightning Network. And
what does that mean?
It's a technical feature that it allows other applications, decentralized applications, to be created and to be used within the Litecoin ecosystem.
Huh.
And one of the other coins that is an emerging coin is the project that, you know, we have created in an initiative to secure everybody's blockchain and digital value, which is BitSecure. That's BITCQR. And we are a digital token hoping to secure this $500 billion industry.
You left out the .io, didn't you?
.io, yeah. BITCQR.io. And we are the digital token.
Tell them what the .io is. Because they may not understand.
So .io is a trend right now in the technical field. You know, everybody's accustomed to the .coms. But I.O. is very trendy within engineers, so for input and output. And you will see a lot of these new domain names that end in .io rather than .com. So our BitSecure project, I think we're going to position it to try to secure the half a trillion market capitalization, and this market capitalization will just continue to skyrocket in the next few years. Someone made a forecast that it will become a $10 trillion industry in the short-term future.
So what is the, Randy, you had mentioned that it had dipped significantly and stuff like that. What do you attribute what he mentioned to?
Sure. So we did have hypergrowth in November and December of last year. I mean, we added a quarter of a trillion to the market capitalization. So when people are making thousands, others are making millions and billions. So that's the reason why we see this decline, this correction, you know, just like a roller coaster. People are going to make money, and they're going to sell. They're going to capture those gains, and we're going to see a decline, a down correction. And right now, Bitcoin can be acquired for $9,000, which to me, in my personal view, is a bargain. So then institutional investors will continue to buy, and then we'll see Bitcoin go up again, and we'll see a correlation with the other digital currencies as well.
So okay, but so I'm gonna hit this again one more time. Val, I don't want you to jump in on this one. Why is it? Let's just forget that the U.S. currency that you say, Val, is backed by gold, which I haven't seen yet. But let's say it's not still, and it's backed by nothing. What happens if the U.S. currency does get backed by gold? What happens to these cryptos?
So I believe Bitcoin already has that global community. So I don't think Bitcoin is going to be affected in that sense, because it already has a global community of consumers, companies, and venues that are accepting it. I think it's just another ecosystem we have to learn to deal with. And an example I can give you is, you know, if we go 20 years ago when everybody was sending mail to the other parts of the world, and then email showed up, email completely revolutionized the way we communicate because it's instant. That doesn't mean that the postal office, you know, went out of business. But there's a place for the postal office, and there's a place for email that we have learned to coexist and utilize. So we will learn to coexist between traditional banking and in the digital markets as well.
Okay, then why is this also not like a dot? Remember the dot-com bust that happened some years ago? We've had a guest on the show who made mega millions in that. Mega millions, and then he went belly up. Now he's back at it. Jeff, I'm blanking on this last name, Dollar Vigilante, who now moved from Canada to Mexico.
Oh, I know who you mean. I still get his stuff. I love him.
Yeah, we've had him on several times. I don't love him, but he,
well,
he
I love
actually
the stuff.
Has done very well. He's come back very well. But he lost everything in the dot-com bust. Why is Bitcoin not a fad thing?
Very good question. So going back, without getting deep into technology, Bitcoin relies on two things, and that is cryptographic power. That's the little computers that we talked about that are mining it, and the Internet. So in order for Bitcoin to cease to exist from the world, we would have to take down the Internet, take down the power grid, take down all the machines that are mining it. So it's almost like asking someone to shut off the Internet.
Yeah,
that's not going to happen anytime soon, because it's a decentralized world, and Bitcoin is a decentralized technology, so it has sustainability, and it's not going anywhere.
Oh, that's excellent. I want to just check for a moment. Paul, are you still here?
Oh, yes, I'm still on.
Good. Now, your little bright ears have been listening. Questions, comments?
No, I'm listening with, bated breath, as were you. My cybersecurity experience, of course, is internal within the federal government, and that was fundamentally associated with vetting of software packages that were coming in from the private sector to be used in the federal government, and making sure that they satisfied the criteria set up by DHS 4300A, FISMA, and NIST. And I'm sure that our distinguished guest is familiar with those.
Yes, sir. Actually, I'm very familiar with the process you just described. I had a official in a official capacity, I was doing something similar in ensuring that the compliance for the projects that were being worked on met the government standards to be accepted as such, mainly in the NIST and NISPOM world. So I can assimilate, you know, what you discussed.
Paul, do you see Bitcoin sticking around? Do you see the crypto staying?
I do.
Paul?
When he said there's only 20 million coins, that was what I needed to know that it would last. Because when you have a buyer and a seller, if you have a buyer that's willing to accept the value that the seller offers, I think it's the transparency to this that's so attractive as well. And the fact that there aren't little banks coming in on different angles, getting a percentage here and a percentage there, and, you know, lying, cheating, stealing, and forging, because a number of them have been known to do that. And that, I don't see the opportunity to do that here. Am I correct, Jose?
That is exactly what the mining is all about. What you just said, to prevent the forging or duplicates of these coins, that's what the miners do. They protect that integrity, and that's where the reward comes in. So you're correct in that that is one of the value that comes from this Bitcoin ecosystem.
Yeah,
because you're saying the fiat currency is worthless because they keep printing and printing and printing? Is that the comparison
that is,
here?
That is correct. The hyperinflation, our dollar becomes less in value on a daily basis as inflation goes up.
Yeah, and the deal going on here is that the cryptocurrency is highly transferable, and the dollar transfers at a much lower rate even if it is backed.
2 minutes.
What about
we're in the last 2 minutes here. We're in the last 2 minutes. So you got one sentence each, okay? Literally, one sentence
each. What about the crypto?
Not a question,
having
Randy.
Bought with a dollar.
Randy, we're at the end of the show. I know.
That was my statement. There it is.
Okay, that was your statement. Jose, your last statement here.
That, you know, I think this crypto community will continue to grow, and we're here to help secure it. BitSecure.io. We're here to protect the trillions.
You got it. I'm loving it. Paul, one last sentence, and 20 words or less, babe.
20 words or less. I checked into the train thing. Didn't come up with anything.
Okay, very good. This program has been brought to you by Kirkgaard Intergalactic Media, our radio partners, ConingCompany.com, Happily200.com, HeavenIncorporated.com, Anna Von Reich, Dr. James Murphy, John Denver, Dr. Joel Wallach, Tippi Hedren, Carol Channing, Deepak Chopra, Ed Asner, Dennis Weaver, Larry Hagman, and Esther Williams, Admiral Eugene Carroll, Jane Goodall, Jonathan Granoff, Dennis Kucinich, Chris Burgard, Paul the Plumber, Terry Cole Whitaker, Sherry St. Vincent, Lonnie Hogan Miller, Sherry Sharifi Brown, Roger Stone, David R., Descendant of King David, RandyShannon.com, Edward F. Group III, Chalene Nightingale, and DrValerie.com, and Doctor is all spelled out. Thanks to Paul C. Bragg for leaving us your daughter, Patricia, to continue your work. A big thanks to our team at Voice America. Jess Bernard, our producer, Ryan Treasure, Randy Jackman, and our friends at Cumulus Radio, Mike Vitale, Mary Flynn, and Ron Simon, and our research director, You Rock, Ron Hayes. To John and Totally Gospel, a big thanks for all your airtime and friendship over the years. A big thanks to our webmaster, Joe Chung. Merci beaucoup to Ben Migan for our theme music, Almost Ordinary People, which is available to you as a free MP3. And also check out Apple, because Apple has just confessed to slowing down their phones so you'll buy a new one. So you got some on Apple, and they're also trying to stop you from fixing your own phone. So let's just take all the guys apart and get our rights to repair back. And that means a country, a finance, a house, your life. Let's repair.
And you're not crazy anymore.
Thank you for joining us today for Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkgaard. Waking Up in America can be heard live every Wednesday on voiceamerica.com, and Valerie welcomes all emails at heavenincorporated.com.
This is for all in you, pouring through. Now your heart is open.